I watched until it finally tore the carcase to pieces, and watched with building horror as it turned its enormous eyes toward me. I tried to back away, but found I had no control over my movements in the spinning whirlwind. It came toward me on tentacle legs, and then burst forward, releasing a garbled cry and a black, viscous liquid that seemed to propel it as it rose toward my face. I screamed, and it felt as though something had grabbed my mind and was trying to pry from it the very core of my sanity. As it came closer, I felt my own death close in, and closed my eyes, waiting for the ripping sound of my flesh as it tore loose. It did not come. I heard nothing, but as it passed by, it slapped me with a vile, putrescent slime. I spun in order to keep it within sight, and watched as it rose above me. It was then I saw the whirling vortex that had held me was gone. Above me, a cloudy purple pool stood as if weightless. The awful monstrosity slashed into it from below, creating no splash or disturbance in the water at all. Watching in wonder, I understood this was no longer my own world, but a dream world. Changes took place without rhyme, reason, or notice. Instantly the ground solidified below me, but as I pushed off it I found it did not hold me. Gravity had been altered from our world. With little effort, I was able to propel myself up toward the pool. As I approached, I saw the thing again, now sitting on a throne made from a collection of humanoid skulls. Near the bottom of the throne, huge mandibles, 3 or 4 times the size of an average human, rested on the floor of the pool, acting as feet for the enormous throne. The legs were made up of slightly smaller skulls, and this continued all the way up to the top of the backing, each row slightly smaller, until I saw the top was crested with skulls roughly half the size of those of a child. I watched in disbelief and awe as an endless procession of people walk out of the purple murk. They walked, facing straight ahead, and as they approached the being, it slowly opened its maw, allowing entrance. These people no more than entered before it snapped closed. As it opened itself for the next in the line, the grinning skull of the previous victim would tumble out, the look on its face one of gratitude in being selected. I watched for only a minute, for horror struck me as I recognized the third in line as my own mother. No longer did the burns touch her, nor did the tentacles she had carried earlier. She stood in line waiting patiently, completely herself, and no longer the monster I had seen at the window. She turned her soft, loving face toward me. None of the others seemed to notice her or the smile that crossed her face as she saw me looking in on her. I could not hear her through the murk, but I watched as she mouthed a question to me. "Do you see what you've done?" She continued to smile, as if the question was about how beautiful the peonies were this time of year, or how handsome Bob Barker was, and didn't I agree Kennedy might very well be our last great president? Quite simply, it was too much. My mind pulsed and seemed to split upon the question. As I turned away, desperate to find a way out, and found the cloaked figure behind me, his hidden face shot toward me, the speed with which it moved, riffling back the cloak and revealing the face completely for the first time. What I had drawn only scraped the surface of depravity and madness I saw within its eyes. It screamed again, that one word of which I dare not say, into my face. The stinking breath of long-dead worlds clung in my nostrils, threatening to turn my stomach inside out. I stood a moment longer, looking into the face above me with feelings I can only describe as love, admiration, and disgust. It was then he reached out a gnarled hand and touched my face, and for a blessed time, blackness was my only companion. I awoke to the feel of something cold and wet on my face. My eyes glanced toward the ceiling to see if the swirling miasma was still present, but found it gone, save for the dripping wetness on the ceiling where it had been. These things combined to steal away my momentary joy upon waking. I had thought for a passing moment, hoped really, if I'm being honest, that it had all been a dream, and with that hope now dead, I looked again at the easel standing in the corner in fear of what I might see. The face was still there, its enraged eyes calling me back to my unfinished work. I had now, burned upon my brain, that final vision of the man in the cloak screaming at me, mere inches from my own face, and I thought, I knew what I had been missing. Hours, days, possibly weeks passed as I sat in the basement trying to pull details from my mind, but the depth of the evil in that face continued to elude me. I worked the details until I could almost see the face I had seen in my visions. I say almost, because looking back, I do not think any amount of toil would capture the ill-tempered lack of compassion it had shown me. I think now my own self-confidence blinded me. I had thought it was the cloak that was missing, that it might be the final piece of the puzzle. But something just out of reach continued to spur me onward toward another unknown detail which would lead to my final destination. I worked myself to exhaustion and found I could not remember the last time I had eaten. Oddly, the thought didn't bother me much. The work and fear seemed to provide everything I needed, and more at the time. I stood to walk about the room, searching for inspiration, and found my pants, once a snug fit, would no longer stay upon my person. I knew the thing would not allow me to change or go upstairs for a belt, so I removed the pants and gaped at the spindly legs I found holding me up. Ravaged by starvation, unknown spans of time and madness, I cackled at the sight of my shrunken legs, and the sound nearly sent me screaming. I did not sound like me, but one of those things from that dream world. I looked down at my legs, no longer laughing, and I wondered what had happened to the rest of me. I glanced back at the canvas, and immediately I felt a smile cross my lips as I found the awful thing I had created smiling back. I think it was then that it really took over. Quite simply, what happened to me from then on didn't matter. The only thing that mattered in the world was to finish and bring him through. I looked to the wall from which the face had originally been, and found it nearly gone from there. In its place the wood was smooth, grain lines no longer crossed the path of the face. Somehow, the Black Pharaoh, as I had come to think of him, had transitioned from the wall to the actual canvas, and now it was inside, pushing out. The canvas bulged as it tried to break through, and I gasped as I saw it moving beneath the surface, obviously trying to step out from that dream world into my own. I shuddered at the thought, but even as I did, I felt a great pull to finish and bring about a meeting with him. I remembered the visions he had shown, the love for him I felt at seeing his face, and knew I was to be different, for he had chosen me. I began to work again, no longer concerned with what I felt it should look like, but rather what the force I channeled wanted. My hands and instruments swept over the canvas, hesitantly at first, then faster until the very motion seemed to blur before my eyes. I was trapped in the work, a slave to my own imagination and that of the evil thing. My consciousness had very little to do with the process any more. As my body worked, my mind watched the swirling blackness form once more, this time within the canvas myself, and I was once more swept away to a different time and into what could only be another of the worlds he inhabited. I was astounded at the strength I felt. None of the weariness or exhaustion followed me to this place. My heart leapt as I saw him ahead of me, his long cloak dragging behind him as he walked away. I followed until I could feel the burn in my legs and the dry heat of the place cooking my lungs. I knew I wasn't in danger, knew also that my physical body was still sitting upon the stool in my empty basement. But the heat seemed to wring the sweat from my body and the moisture from my mouth until, regardless of what I knew, I could go no further. "Remember the door," a voice boomed from everywhere. I looked up to see the Black Pharaoh had stopped ahead of me.
His back was still turned, and I could only assume it was he who had spoken. His arm raised, and I saw a blackened hand extending from the sleeve, pointing off to our right. I followed to where the hand pointed, and saw in amazement a great pyramid. I could not gauge the distance, for the rest of the landscape was as it had been when I first witnessed the Pharaoh walking the others into the dry, barren, and featureless waste. But I estimated the temple, for that is what it must be, to be 3 or 4 times larger than any on earth. Even Giza, in its enormity, would have looked like a child's toy by comparison. I looked back at him, and once more found I was alone. Fear tore through me, not of being alone, but of never seeing his face again. I thought once more of those left here to go mad, and through nothing more than my own will was able to calm myself. I believed he had brought me here for a reason, and somehow he or those he worked for needed me. At least that is what I told myself. That thought gave me some comfort at the time. After a short rest, I walked toward the Great Pyramid. There were times when I thought it was moving away, times when I woke still walking and swore I had already been here, as if I had been walking in a circle the entire time. The voyage must have lasted days. When I finally reached the base, I collapsed against it and wondered at how cold the stones were. I looked up and realized I could no longer see the top. Although twin suns bore down from each side of the pyramid, and no clouds were in sight, the top was not visible. It was simply swallowed by the upper atmosphere. I wondered if it actually rose above this world. I stood, again impressed with my strength despite my trials, and wandered the base for a bit. I felt the structure hovering above like an abusive mate, and desperately tried to find the purpose for my visit here. I found only endless miles of stone. Given its size, it would take days to traverse the base of the monolith. I didn't think I would need to. He had brought me here for a reason. I could feel it, and I doubted very much, at least this time, that it was simply to watch me go mad in the heat. I circled around to the side facing the largest sun, a walk of no more than 5 miles, at the end of which I rested. I searched the area I could see, and finally saw the door of which he had spoken. I ran to it, and soon found myself in front of its painting, drained but also filled with a joy I cannot describe. It was as if all of my shortcomings had been absolved, and I had surpassed all expectations. I reached for the door, expecting to gain entrance, but found no knob. Further inspection told me more, and my heart began to sink again. The door had no hinges. I knocked and realized it was only painted to look like a door. It was indeed stone like the rest of the structure. My mind wavered, and I staggered at the realization that I may never make it home, or even out of sight of these unforgiving suns. I cried without tears, and realized there was no fluid to spare the indulgence. I stopped, tried to collect my thoughts, and finally beat on the door. I smashed my fist against it without feeling. I watched, my mind detached from the act, as blood flew from my hands. It sprayed over the wall, the door, and my own body with each blow, and still I continued to hammer upon it. My rage finally exhausted, I crumbled to the dry earth. My body rebelled and tried to vomit, but nothing came but hoarse groans of pain. I looked up at the door and watched as my blood began to run back up the wall. It collected and began to form a shape. In a matter of minutes, a 5-pointed star stood out in the center, and below it, the face, his face, as if my blood had drawn it out and made it visible. As I looked, the cabalistic symbol changed. Designs wound their way around the perimeter, and finally to the inside of the star, where I watched as an ancient script written in the small letters of a foreign language made their way from corner to corner. Ngui Ngu Na, Cthulhu Walaya Uga Nagal Fatan. I bit my tongue to keep myself from immediately saying what I somehow recognized as a chant, and stifled a scream as the voice once more boomed from the ether.
"Remember!"
I looked again at the door, licked my lips, loosened my tongue from the grip of my teeth, already tasting the coppery blood, and slowly spoke the words.
"Fungui, Mgu, Nau, Kutsuru, Vilaya, Waga, Nagal, Vatan."
Instantly I returned to my basement, and stood horrified at what was taking place before me. No longer did I sit on the stool. I faced the wall, and watched as my hands, now mere skin and bones, blurred about it. I painted with my own life's blood a crimson representation of the door on the temple, with only one difference. Now it was open. Things crawled and slithered about in the darkness behind the open doorway. I was opening a portal into our world. At the realization, my hands moved impossibly faster, and still I could not stop them. I looked about the room for something I could use, even as I saw my hands painting a representation of the Black Pharaoh holding open the door for whatever lay within. The canvas, I saw, lay in the floor just in front of my feet, the face now gone, and in its place the cabalistic star I had seen on the door. It was only then I realized the Pharaoh had deceived me. The canvas had been nothing more than a medium to bring me through, a way to show me how to open the door, so that I may open one on this side and let them through. My blood ran in rivulets from my hands and spread upon the canvas. I saw the blood was organizing and had already formed the elaborate designs. The scripts were half complete. Panicked, I did the only thing I could. With all control of my hands now at the mercy of another, I kicked at the canvas, only hoping to move it from its place below my bleeding hands. But it would not budge, and it continued to change. I began to feel the heat from that place, and knew the time was almost upon me. The things from the dark would soon come sweeping in and over me in their search to destroy and devour anything good within this world. I continued to kick at it, felt the backing first crack, then break. I stepped upon the canvas, sweeping my feet, blurring out the star and the script. At once my hands dropped to my sides, and the heat from the other world seemed to dissipate. Frozen, I stood and looked down at my hands, as if I had no strength to raise them. Bone showed through white at the tips of my fingers, and twin pools of blood upon the basement floor continued to spread. Even as I stared, the pools joined and turned, and ran impossibly around my feet toward the canvas once more. I realized then that the nightmare was far from over, and would not be until I had destroyed the abomination. I kicked the canvas once more, and this time it did move, sliding across the floor to stop in the far corner. I watched the blood turn and continue to follow it. I ran, knowing I couldn't simply continue to kick the thing around the room. I ran with the last of my strength up the stairs, even as I felt the pressure on my throat once more. It was no longer as strong, nor as close, so I was to make it to the kitchen above. Once there, the pressure ceased. I shambled about the kitchen, looking in vain for my cigarette, and realized I hadn't had a cigarette since going into the basement, and prayed I hadn't taken them down there. I made my way to the living room, and found them lying on the table in front of the window. At once I was seized with a need to sit down and smoke. A voice within me chattered, assuring me I had earned this one, and should stop and just enjoy it. I recognized the voice as that of the Black Pharaoh, and still I found it impossible not to listen. I felt my body move, outside of my control, to the window that looked out upon my little patch of earth, and wrestled a cigarette from the pack with numb hands, and held the lighter in my hand for a moment. I tried to gain control, but eventually flicked the wheel to light my cigarette. The pain was enormous as the wheel hit the ragged flesh on my fingers. I realized now that pain and the moment of clarity it brought not only saved me, but quite possibly the world as we know it. It drowned out the voice of a pharaoh that had tried to play on my hunger for rest. I immediately threw down the cigarette, set off to the garage, and within, found what I needed to end the nightmare. My hands now throbbing were in agony as I carried the heavy can to the top of the stairs. I weighed the risk of going back into the basement and finally just dropped it. I watched the metal cylinder spill its contents as it rolled down the stairs and out of sight. I stood for a moment longer, my eyes watering from the fumes that rose below, until I began to feel heat rising. It was not from the gas, for I had not yet lit the trail that descended the stairs, and I realized those things had once again managed to partially open the door. Acting as quickly as I could, I struck the lighter. The wheel caught a loose flap of skin on my thumb and struck the bone, sending a wave of nausea to the pit of my stomach. I tried again, this time holding down the gas mechanism with the least damaged finger on my left hand, while flipping the wheel with a similar finger on my right. After a few tries, finally a flame sparked, only to be nearly put out by a sudden hot wind rising from below. I cupped the flame toward me, protecting it from the steady gust, and knelt to light the gas. At first, I thought it might not catch, as if the things in their wisdom had somehow hexed the fluid itself, when it finally caught and ran down the stairs. I stood watching it go, and heard a whoop sound as it reached the can. At once the heat doubled, and I turned to move, only to find I had been standing in a pool of gas, and was now myself ablaze from the knees down. I ran to the floor, all exhaustion temporarily lifted from me, and dove from the front porch into the grass, which I saw was now standing knee-high in the yard. I rolled, looking down at my feet as I did, wondering, even as I burned, how long I had been in there. Eventually I managed to extinguish the fire and lay where I had stopped rolling. I watched the house burn, even as I heard the sirens in the distance. When they arrived, men ran across the yard, hoses in tow, but quickly realized they were too late. They were still there, the house burning like a torch as the ambulance pulled away from the curb. I have not told you this so that you will take pity upon me, nor am I delusional in that I expect you to believe. I only tell you so that perhaps you will find some way to fulfill my previous request to cover the walls of this room in which I am being held, for I sense his presence again. As I feared, he has found me once more, and sits waiting within the concrete structure of the east wall. Please, I implore you to fulfill that request, if not for the sake of the world, then for the sake of my own unstable sanity.